in this week, with the match of the day cameras at Plough Lane to capture the action, the Dons overcame Walsall to win a crucial third division promotion battle. A characteristic header from Alan Court gave the hosts the lead in the first half when Wally Downs' cross comes shot went in off the far upright, the points were secure. I aimed to hit it as near as the goal as possible, the midfielder claimed. They have to go in sometimes. Top of the table clashes against Walsall from 40 years ago. What will ever happen next? With the same old Wombles. We're back.
Might not be life or death, my friend, but to me, it's more important than that.
Hello, hello, dear listener. Welcome to the show, same old Wombles. I'm Matt Cooper, and today I'm joined by mon frère, Niall. Hi, Niall.
Hi, Matty.
And the amazing producer and angry man, Adam Proctor. Hello, Adam.
I'm not that angry.
No, I mean, like, you look like a mild mannered janitor, as Mark pointed out the other day, but really, we know you've got a Hong Kong fooey inside of you. And finally, our stats man and football guru, Mr. Mark Lewis. Hello, Mark.
Good evening. Good evening. I have a quick bone to pick with you.
Well,
with all of you, actually.
Oh, okay.
Have you now decided that this is the order? I'm always last.
Yeah. That's Why? My decision. I run in a particular order now. So I come to you last with,
Mark,
you know, because you always got some quip to come back with.
Mark, you're the headline act.
Yeah. Exactly.
Hopefully we've got another headline act. They just texted me, so let's see if they actually make an appearance.
Yeah, that's right. I wasn't gonna build it up, but you know, we could have a special guest. We might not do. In actual fact, Adam, what show number are we on right now?
99.
This 99. Is our 99th show. We've been doing this 99 times. No one has told us to stop. Well, they have, but you know, not to our faces as such. Anyhow, chaps.
We keep getting more responses though.
Yes.
The more of us we do, the more feedback we get.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, I do apologize.
And now can I just say
professional in our midst.
I'd just like to welcome to our show our incredible special guest. And I'm loving the fact that he's so utterly prepared. Look at him. Mr. Chris Phillips. Hello, Philo, how are you doing?
I'm good. I've got the headphones on. I've got the professional podcasting microphone all warmed up here. But I do apologise. I got waylaid there with some important work I had to cover off doing the Jazz FM breakfast show. Good morning. For tomorrow morning, I had to do some stuff there. So I do apologise. I'm here.
It is amazing. So, Adam, when you're listening to this back, when anyone listens to this, you're going to hear how dodgy our sound is. And then there's Philo.
Bunch of amateurs.
It's going to sound like Snoop because he is
a bunch of amateurs, Chris. You should know that by now.
It's like a Don's Trust board meeting, this. Except I've upped the ante.
Yeah, but there's no way I would get everyone to record their own inputs on their own devices and figure all that stuff out. So we just quit on that. There's only two.
Boring.
Everyone else and me. Chris has a rough idea of what I'm talking about. It's nowhere near.
I can't see how good and how phallic looking Chris Phillips' microphone is.
Philo's special, right? Because he's on, and he's just referred to the fact that it's a bit like a Don's Trust board reunion. Just for the old time's sake, this episode's going to last 5 hours.
Oh my god, it really is Don's Trust board.
The benefit of everyone's.
I claim my fiver.
Situation: Niall and Chris and I were never on the Don's Trust board together.
Oh, you weren't?
No, no, that's right. Yeah,
Chris and I were, but no, I wasn't.
Mark and Chris together, and Philo and Niall were on the board together, and obviously, me and Adam have never touched the board. Me by choice, Adam because I don't know, he's some sort of masochistic applying all the time.
You don't know how much you've missed out on your proper duty to the yellow and blue, mate. One day it will be your turn.
You're having a laugh, my friend. I've heard the stories.
We've got the scars.
Wasn't too bad.
Yeah, that's right. I know how much rehab people are in. Actually, the DTB should actually set up a rehab unit. Anyhow, listen.
Yards is a good place to start after Saturday's the last 5 minutes.
Well, I think before we get into that, I want to properly have a chat with Philo, because there's a lot of stuff that's gone on, man. It's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Can I ask a question? I want to ask some background stuff here, man. How did you end up supporting the Dons? What's happened there?
That was easy for me. I mean, my dad was a doctor. I grew up in Elsfield, for starters, right? So I went to, you know, Beatrix Potter School in Magdalen Road. My dad was a doctor in Elsfield since I was the age of three. We moved to, my grandfather was always in Elsfield. He was a fireman in the war, came back, found half his home blown up by a V2 bomb. Anyway, my mum and dad moved just up the road to Wandsworth Common. I grew up in Elsfield. And yeah, like I said, my dad was a doctor on Garrett Lane, Aboyne Road there. Was almost the club doctor at one point by invitation, but couldn't commit to travelling around the UK or England whilst he had four young children, of which I was the oldest. And how did I get down to the Dons? Well, my grandfather, who lived in French Court Road, just off Garrett Lane, just really near the old Greyhound Stadium, the new Plough Lane, he used to live there, and we used to do that famous sort of football triangle, you know, Fulham, Chelsea, Wimbledon. Many did it back in the day in the mid-70s. So he would drag me kicking the can down the road, you know, to see Chelsea. Then we're down at Craven Cottage 1 week. But I distinctly remember wandering around to Plough Lane on bitterly cold Saturday afternoons in the non-league days in the mid-70s, and a little bit of glory from Middlesbrough that I distinctly remember, you know, playing Middlesbrough there. And some bother boy from the northeast threatened to kick my granddad's head in, and all this, which kind of drove me away from football a little bit, even though my granddad would have stomped him, being a big, strong fireman from World War II. But yeah, that's how I got into supporting Wimbledon. To be fair, I didn't really follow Wimbledon that much during the 70s and 80s. It was just on and off. But when I came back to football, my heart drove me all the way back to Wimbledon for sure, even though I was now living in North London. I just love the community vibe there, you know?
I think that's what it is. I think that's what drove most of us, is that sense, because certainly me and Niall, I don't know about Adam, but me and Niall, you know, we were born in Wimbledon, but we went to South East and we were taken to different, you know, went to different clubs, went to Cheltenham, went to West Ham. But there was something about Plough Lane, this small little ground, this little community, which really attracted to us.
When did you go to West Ham?
I think Dad took us to West Ham.
I never
He's went older than you. You won't remember.
I went to West Ham on an away game where Wimbledon were the visiting team, Matt. So we were Wimbledon, following Wimbledon, in the Wimbledon end at West Ham. At no point did I go watch West Ham in the home end, ever.
Niall had a Tottenham scarf at one point. That's all I'm saying. Anyhow.
Oh, it's all coming out now.
Yeah, exactly.
There is a photo of me in a Chelsea shirt, which I've tried to burn, but unfortunately. Dear me.
And I'm still getting on with this whole triangle thing. I never did the whole Chelsea.
I must win then, because I was actually taken to no other games other than Wimbledon, because that was who.
No, neither was I.
And I How did you get a Chelsea top, for goodness sake?
I had no idea. I was a charity shop somewhere.
I had an Arsenal top, actually.
Okay, all right. Point. Then I feel this is getting away from us.
Yeah. Mark, you went to a charity shop and thought, oh, that's nice, I'll get a Chelsea shirt. Where does that even cross your brain? No,
I don't think I went to a charity shop. I think my mother, the one person in the family that doesn't do sport at all.
Yeah.
Not realising the dichotomy between being a Chelsea fan or being anything to do with Chelsea and being anything to do with Wimbledon.
No, but Philo's just told us there was a triangle. There was the Chelsea-Fulham Wimbledon triangle.
I'm a little younger than Philo.
I'm pretty sure there was a
genuinely
well-honed
saw
triangle.
Chelsea when they were shit than Philo.
Yeah, oh yeah, God, yeah. You know, they were terrible. I mean, I distinctly remember my granddad taking me in the shed end, getting him to the front so he could see through the fence. Oh, could you let my grandson through? Blah blah blah. But I remember rivers of pee at halftime cascading down the terraces.
Nice.
Unhealthy combination of stale burger fat and stale urine wafting across Stamford Bridge. The disabled cars that parked around the back of the goal. I remember it all. But also I remember going to the cottage, because my granddad wasn't really loyal to any particular football team. But, you know, we did have a walk round. Anyway, I think for me it was like, my dad passed on 2005, but prior to that, my grandfather passed on in the mid-80s. And when I came back to football, I wanted to really reconnect with a few kind of echoes from the past that I cherish, you know. And so I wasn't about to go down to Chelsea or Fulham, to be honest. So it had to be Wimbledon. And I turned up. I remember turning up one day. I was living in North London. I was on the radio and I was coming back to football proper. And I remember turning up at Sellers Park one Tuesday evening, I think, and there were about 3,000 people there. It was Wimbledon against Man City. It was bitterly cold and the PA guy was like half dead and nothing was going on. And I thought, it's got to be better than this. And luckily, it got better than that.
Yeah. I did it.
But I loved it.
So how did you, so talking of PA, so how did that happen? How did you get invited to be the PA?
Said match, Manchester City, I thought this is so dull. And I'd been to see a few Tottenham games at White Hart Lane with, you know, the glamour boys up there, Klinsmann and all that. And the atmosphere was incredible. Come back down to Sellers Park, not our ground, hardly anyone there at the time. Palace guy on the PA wasn't interested, playing sort of, you know, boring rock tunes from obscure groups from the 1970s. And I thought, right, I'm getting
into
the club.
Was that Ian McNay
then?
Was that Ian McNay?
Was it Ian McNay? No, of course not. Ian McNay wouldn't. No, I don't think it was Ian McNay. But
sorry, apologies, Ian, for that reference if you're listening.
I'm
but
playing
it's just
all
obscure
Ian McNay's
70s band thing.
Rock tunes every half time now. I got in touch with a club and they said, I said, yeah, Kiss FM, blah, 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 blah. And they said, no, thank you. We're all right. But thanks for getting in touch. I was like, oh, okay. And then a week later, as it would happen, the guy who did the Palace PA resigned. And they said, are you still interested? I said, I certainly am. And they said, right, can you come in and do the game on whatever the date was? And I said, I'll be there. I didn't even look at my calendar. I said, I'll be there. When I checked the fixture list, it was Manchester United at home. So it was three sides red, one side blue and yellow. And there's me uncharacteristically sort of bigging up the Dons no end to a cascade of boos around the stadium. And suddenly Wimbledon fans were like, hello, who's this guy? You know? So I just gradually sort of changed the gravity back towards us and gave us a little bit of a home welly, you know? That's what I wanted to do. And then it became sort of slightly fun with the off-key comments and bits of music and, you know, wishing Manchester United fans a safe journey back to Guildford and stuff like that. You know,
did you, talking of that sort of stuff, did you do a Hovis tune?
Yeah.
Did you play that?
I did the Hovis thing. I also did Steptoe & Son theme when QPR came out at halftime. And people still talk about that to this day if I ever meet a Hoops fan. Oh, I'm going up there. The bloke played Steptoe & Son. Oh, we were laughing. I said, that was me.
That is brilliant. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
And then obviously we've gone through the whole, you know,
I have to say, I do still personally, it's the Hovis ad with Leeds. Because that was brilliant. I love that so much. That is definitely one. I mean, there's obviously many other moments that we've talked about on this pod over the last couple of years now, for which Philo, there's been a few moments of genii.
Yeah, I've had a bit of fun and I've got myself in a bit of trouble. Also got in trouble. Do you remember the time the Arsenal floodlights went out? The Arsenal game at Sellers Park.
Oh, the dodgy bookmakers.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. And it never came back on. And I said to the Palace scoreboard guy, who I'll tell you what would be funny, why don't you put up on the scoreboard, has anyone got 50p for the meter? And he did. And somebody took a picture. Someone took a picture of it. And the next day it was in the sun. And he got hauled across the coals, and David Barnard, the CEO, knew that I was involved and sort of ticked me off a little bit. And I've made some silly boo-boos and some silly mistakes and things, which, you know, it's par for the course, I think.
But it added to it. It really did. And so, obviously, the big moment, can we just get this clarified, is when you stepped down from doing the PA, because the whole thing had come up, obviously, you know, moving 70 miles away. What happened?
Oh, I can literally remember it like it was yesterday. So we just finished a game, which I can't remember what it was. Mikey T would be able to tell me, and who scored the goals and what minute.
Of course. But
we finished the game, and Charles Koppel, and I say never trust a man who doesn't wear socks with his moccasin shoes, came into the PA room with his moccasin shoes, no socks, and said to me, I'd like you to go out onto the pitch and announce to the fans that we're moving to Milton Keynes. It's all ahead. It's all going ahead. So I need you to go out and tell the fans that we're moving to Milton Keynes. And I said, you're having a bubble bath, mate. I handed him the microphone and I went, you do it and good luck. I hope you live. I quit. And I went and sat in the Holmesdale Road and I told everyone, stay
yeah.
with me. This is going to be fun.
Yeah. Oh, mate, that is fantastic. Just brilliant.
That was that it. Was... I was done. Yeah.
Mate, that was hilarious.
And I mean, then I spent like hours at Charles Koppel's office in Mayfair sort of pleading the argument with him that it could be done, that we can be successful. We can stay in Plough Lane. You know, we could have a stadium in Plough Lane. And he wouldn't listen to any of it. Obviously, you know, they're not going to listen to any of us. They had their plan and that was it.
Yeah. But then when we started up again, obviously you were there from the beginning. And that was, I mean, we had a laugh. We had a hoot when we were first doing Radio WDON. Yes.
First of all, we went to the protest years, didn't we? So we sort of went through this moment where we didn't really have any football to go to. We were just turning up and then handing out contraband programs and selling, you know, unofficial merchandise and going home. trying some way to sabotage the radio mic at Sellers Park so we could get our message across. That never came off.
You had a column, didn't you, in Yellow and Blue?
I had a column.
Oh, God, that column. That column.
Yeah.
Chris. Honestly, I love the column. But the column was the weekly moment where those of us who are editing it were going, right, what do we need to be careful about libel this week? That was basically the pillow column. It was absolutely quality. I mean, I still remember the Red Jacket Man is one of my favourite columns.
Oh, Red Jacket Man.
Wrote.
Do you remember that? At Millwall.
Yeah.
The guy who was gesticulating from our end into the Millwall end and all these rabid Millwall fans were giving him the sort of slice across the throat. gesticulation and then the police came 10 minutes before the end of the game, went, I think it's time you should leave now, really, while you've got a chance, you know. Oh, you what? He's like, I'm only waving to my friend. Yeah, it's time for you to go, mate. And he went out the outdoor and then back in the other outdoor and then came up in the Millwall side, and as soon as they saw him they kicked 7 bells out of him. So, yeah, my column had to be a sort of parody of a diary of the man in the red jacket, and there was a little bit of blood on it. Just, like, ridiculous. A crazy golf down at Brighton. You remember when we played Brighton when they were in the With Dean?
Yeah.
What the mighty club they are now. And we played crazy golf. Yeah, there were funny times. And then, yeah, Selhurst Park became King's Meadow. Of course, no away fans at all, so we could be almost as irreverent as we wanted to be, you know. I mean, do you remember I was playing I played Kenny G's Songbird for an extended injury break, you know, smooth jazz like it was some supermarket background track or something.
You played the foghorn thing when it was really...
Yes!
Jazz.
Yeah, well, I had a bunch of sound effects in my computer and... Just by chance, the beauty of a thick pea soup fog rolling in from which was the end it came from? It wasn't the Kingston Road end, was it? It was the other end, the sewage end.
Where the sewage works were,
whatever that was called.
Yeah,
I remember.
The sewage
thick
end. Yeah.
Fog coming in, and then we couldn't see a thing, could we?
No.
So I just happened fortuitously to have a sound of a foghorn on my computer, and I played it. And then the sound of graveyard bells and howling wolves and all sorts.
Oh,
funny times, man.
It was hilarious. I have to say, I have to give all credit to you because I remember in the early days, every now and again, doing the PA. And that was terrifying. And even now, when I hear you do it, and there's a player coming on who's got a very long, complicated name, I'm just thinking, good grief, I'd have got that so embarrassingly wrong. So
I have got them slightly wrong. I tend now to look at all the names, and firstly, I check off all the names correct with the squad numbers because there's always something wrong on the team sheet. Always two number fives, somebody's number six, and they're supposed to be number eight, that sort of stuff. But then I specifically go in on like the long names, and I ask the Oppo side, you know, can you pronounce this for me? And I write down a little phonetic thing on the side so I've got the names right. I mean, it took me long enough to get Isaac Ogundere. Instead of Isaac Ogundere, you name it. In the end, his mum said, for goodness sake, it's Ogundere. Somebody sent a message, so I'm like, okay, that's what I'm sticking with. But I mean, there's so many convoluted and long, wonderful names now, you know, that play football. It's,
this is this day, Omar Bugel.
Bugel.
Or is it?
Bugel.
I say Bugel, because there's an Omar Bogle as well, isn't there?
There is no more Bogle. Yeah, that's plays for Newport, I think.
Yeah. Confusion? What? Bugiel and Bugle, both Omar. They are both Omar, aren't they? Yeah. And then there's There's all sorts of names. I mean, the long African names are the ones. I love getting those. I mean, I've kind of mastered those long before, for my love of like music and jazz. And you get the, you can recognize an African name. You can tell the phonetics of it straight away, but I just double check just in case.
Here's the mad thing I always wondered about music you play at football. Because obviously you are an aficionado. You know, you were Kiss back in the day, and now obviously you're doing jazz and FM and so on. So that's proper quality music. I remember randomly asking you about Jill Scott on the Whoop Guestbook years and years and years ago, and your response was like, what on earth is Toolmark doing asking about Jill Scott?
I love it. I think it's brilliant.
But the stuff you play, obviously, at football, Kings Meadow, or even Selhurst, and obviously nowadays at Plough Lane, it's not... You wouldn't play it if it was your choice, free choice, would you?
No. I mean, I it's a funny thing. I think as you get older, you sort of appreciate music that you didn't like it retrospectively. When I was growing up, I was very much into my soul and funk, and no one could tell me to deviate in any other direction. And then jazz and reggae and house and hip hop and stuff like that. But nowadays, I'll be sitting watching Top of the Pops 1985 or something, and I'll go, oh yeah, I remember this tune, and I'll just kind of make a note of it, and then I'll bring it out at the football, you know. Yeah. Or what I try to do with Plough Lane is I try and mix up things as best I can that gives a kind of interesting left field but contemporary kind of vibe. So I'm playing a bit of pop music, you know, a bit of even a bit of Katy Perry, stuff like that. But I'll also go really left and play some stickier, a proper drum and bass with like throbbing bass lines and stuff. Ba-da-dun, ba-da-dun, all that kind of stuff. And
yeah,
then,
and that, my daughter was listening to that. She was saying, that's my tune. So she was amazed that was coming out. It feels to me that you've got...
I'm doing that on purpose, by the way.
Yeah, there's three tunes. Purpose, yeah. There's three tunes. Mm-hmm. Now it feels like it's that one. Then there's the life, what's it called? From Trainspotting, and then they come out and it's We Are Wimbledon, and I'm just thinking that's your three tunes like in the lead up to the match. Where's
that
come
in
from?
That zone, yeah,
yeah. I'm
well,
surprised.
So many people wanted to hear We Are Wimbledon, but it's not really something that really explodes into life. You know, it sort of builds up, and so I kind of decided, right, I need something that really like. There's a sort of trigger that, you know, bada-dun, and then Born Slippy came from Aaron Paul, you know, the commentator.
Yeah.
One of our friends and stuff, and he texted me one night. He obviously had a few glasses of wine and decided that Born Slippy was the one to bring the Dons on. But actually, that, again, takes a long while to build up. So if they come up out the tunnel, you need something instant, you know? So I kind of now try to build something up so that it's crescendo when they come out. Then I'll do the lineup, and then I'll play We Are Wimbledon, and hopefully we'll get in one chorus of We Are Wimbledon before I have to fade it out and the ref blows up to start the game. You know, that's kind of the timing of it. So I used to have like, you know, Enter the Dragon, stuff like that.
Yeah, Enter the Dragon was the one we always had. So what happened there? Because I just thought that was what we came out to.
Yeah, I mean, and the trouble is the PA at Plough Lane is deficient. It was sort of value engineered out of the stadium that we needed a PA. And it's actually an emergency evacuation system that we're bodged into. And I'll reveal that for you. The actual PA system doesn't really exist. And the trouble with Plough Lane is you get such a great atmosphere in there. When you've got like 1,200 Bradford fans to your left and a whole load of Dons fans to your right, or some ultras that appear over there from PSV Eindhoven or whatever. the atmosphere is so good that you can't actually hear what's on the PA. I mean, I can't hear what I'm playing on the PA half the time from where I sit because it's just, you know, but they've got a bunch of speakers there, which Fulham bought the wrong speakers and they've given them to AFC Wimbledon, but they've yet to put them in the main stand. And when they do, it's liftoff, boys.
Right.
You know, we get the actual proper
They'll be able to hear you in the other parts of the ground then.
That's
I'm going to ask this question, connected with kind of loosely connected to music, but definitely connected with last week's pod. What is the go-to Wimbledon song that we should be looking at? So what's the song that you think that's the best one that the crowd sing?
I mean, I really think We Are Wimbledon is good. I've sort of slightly pitched it up. I did a pitched up version, so it's faster, but it keeps the same pitch because it's too slow otherwise. And I think that's the one that everyone likes to sing, but you just can't hear it loud enough when the PA's on, that's the problem. But it does tend to get people singing it. I've noticed that.
But what was the tune you mixed up? That was brilliant. It was hands up, yeah. If you're a Wimbledon fan, put your hands up. Yeah.
That was Fat Man Scoop.
Yeah.
He just happened to be at work one day when I was coming into Kiss. Saw him in the studio, spotted him, and I said, oh, I've got to get him to do me a jingle for Wimbledon. So I went and got him to do, "You're so built by his Fat Man Scoop, and I'm a dance fan, baby." And then next thing I knew, he burst out into a rendition of his song, Be Faithful, and changed all the lyrics to Wimbledon. And so in effect, did a sort of dub plate, you know, bit of a mad one, really. But a prized, cherished little possession there.
You should drop that back in again.
Yeah, I was going to say that they should be coming out to that.
Never heard that.
That would love. I would love that.
Mark, I've heard that. It's brilliant.
I'll give it another spin. I have been playing it, but sometimes it sort of comes out a bit early, you know, before, because most people, they don't really get in their seats till like 5 minutes before the game. That's the trouble, you know. So a lot of messaging doesn't get through to people.
But I think that's it. You know, like, it should be, you've got 5 minutes. There's that new announcement thing. Is that you as well going, you've got five minutes before the game starts?
Nobody told me about that. All of a sudden it just, you know.
What
it's
is
like,
that about? It's so weird, that new announcement. And they don't do it at half-time or they miss it out.
They do it at half-time, yeah. The idea of it, because I'll tell you what it is. See, again, about the PA, it's there's no zones in the PA. There is just one PA. And it's so loud in some places upstairs that they unplug it, or sometimes they'll turn the whole PA down. So during the summer when they've got events on, their security team will just turn it down because it drowns out what they're trying to do. You come back after the closed season and the PA's on half volume and no one seems to know what's going on. And there's no zones. So everyone's standing on the main concourses drinking beer, eating burgers and whatnot. And the idea of it is that because the PA is one zone, the emergency PA is much louder than the actual PA, what I'm doing. So the idea is that the guy upstairs does the announcement in the guise of, you know, emergency, just to say, the game's about to start, please take your seat. But he sounds quite sort of droll and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does sound like some sort of public...
Your attention, please. The game is about to start. They wanted to get Johnny Jackson to do an announcement that they could play, and Johnny Jackson was like, I'm not doing that. That's just cheesy. I'm not doing that.
It's a bit like being at theatre, though, isn't it?
That's what I was thinking. What we should do is try and get an iconic Wimbledon player to just to do that bit. You know, there must be somebody.
Or Philo. You're you, mate.
This is it. But the trouble is they've turned off the PA in the concourses. So they don't have individual volume controls for zones. They've either got on or off. And so what they've done is they've turned off the concourses from the PA that is in the stadium. So that means whatever I say goes out to the stadium, it doesn't go into the concourses. So you can't hear me in there.
I don't understand the reason behind that, because I thought if you're in a concourse, it might be quite nice to have a bit of music and hearing you
chat.
Yeah,
but that's the thing. The concourse is on the same ring as the police room upstairs. So in order to turn the concourse on, you then drown out the security and police team upstairs. Nightmare. So what they need to do is they need to put in zones so that we can go, all right, we'll turn the police down, we'll turn the concourse up, and then everything's lovely. But instead, they've just got the emergency guy going, the game will begin in 2 minutes. You know,
it's all of this you can't hear if you're behind the south stand with all the food zone anyway.
There's another thing. I don't know. They get people in to like test the zones and make sure the volume's loud enough. I don't know if I'm being
very, very kindly. Philo reads out the golden goal stuff, which I text him for when the goal scores well in the minute and whatever else. And then every single game, you get an email in. I had two that I read this morning saying I sit in the east stand and I couldn't hear anything, but when I used to sit in the west stand, I could hear everything. Who were the golden goal winners, you know?
I mean, I've stopped emailing them saying this, but, you know, at some point, I guess it's CapEx, you know, what's available. They're going to have to spend some money on improving the PA to communicate with the fans, et cetera. It's just, you know, I guess it's just not a real priority at the moment. I don't know.
Well, fortunately, Philo, you're on Samuel Wombles, and we listen to. Yeah, they pay attention to it. They listen to this pod. And they make changes. It's frightening, to be honest with you. So next time you go in, it will all be fixed.
I mean, I have to credit Mark Jones, though, and if you say that, because Mark Jones, you know, he's doing a lot of really incredible work with the aesthetic of the club, the program, photographs, the archive of photos, the feeling of belonging has gone up. You know, the aesthetic of it is beautiful, and he understands what my pain is about the PA because it's always been that way. When we opened up Plough Lane for the first time, I was upstairs on the gantry, and the PA, I'm not kidding you not, the PA was a piece of telephone wire soldered to a plug that was plugged into the back of the mixer.
Like,
And Joe, what's his name?
Palmer.
Palmer.
Palmer. Joe Palmer would come by. All right, guys. And I go, well, actually, Joe, as you can see, I brought in my soldering iron today to resolder the PA plug back on. It really needs to be put in properly. And he'd just go, yeah, all right, we'll have a good game and walk off. And that was it. But Mark Jones has come along and gone, we really need to do something about this. But he's basically got to the level that we can get to at this point. The next level up is spend a load of money, put the speakers in, zone out the PA properly. There we are. You know what I mean? Proper stadium.
There were so many issues with the ground when, you know, when I came back onto the board, and he was just like, and you didn't hear all of this. You kind of there was a bit of nattering going on, but you didn't really know. And you go onto the board, and it's like this long list of things that just aren't right. Because Philo, like you'll know that, you know. Also, now I know we know Charlie, so Charlie would be like just bang his head against brick wall, probably quite next to the same hole that Jones had banged his head against. But it's like even things like plug points in that big lounge were all in completely the wrong place. I mean, like loads of basic stuff was just not done right. So I also feel your pain completely, Phil. I totally get it. It's things that should have
Well,
been
I'm a
done right
presenter.
first
I
time
like
round.
things to work, you know, and I can present. But Charlie Talbot, it was messing with his mind, man, because that's his profession. You know, he's an event technician. You know, he puts in PA systems. He's got the specialists. You know, he wanted it done correctly. He had an idea on it, but unfortunately, you know, he was shouting in the dark. And I think that's a bit of a culture problem where professional fans like myself or like Charlie, I guess we're sort of appreciative of what we've given and what we do. I mean, I still do it as a voluntary thing. I don't get paid. Never been paid by FC Wimbledon in 22 years. Spend 6 hours of my Saturday kind of basically working for them. And it's frustrating when sometimes when you think you're banging your head against the wall as a professional that knows how this stuff should be. But that's just how it is, you know. But I still gaze out to the grass of, you know, Plough Lane and go, nah, we're home, you know what I mean?
But I love
I
the fact
said that. I said that to Matt just this Saturday, literally going there and like just going like, God, I love Plough Lane. And like, you know, that just when you're looking at it and you just the moments when that grass, that pitch, especially when it's because it's been packed recently, we've filled the stadium out. You know, again, in games that you just would not expect. And it's just, it still makes me kind of like lift my heart right now, you know, and how many years we've been there. Such a special stadium.
85.8% capacity, which is the very top
Incredible.
of the whole of League Two, naturally.
Yeah, it's
Just
incredible.
Field 78 is the closest one to us.
But we always knew that, didn't we? We always knew build it and they will come. That's what we knew.
Absolutely.
We knew that. You don't need a business plan. Just put the stadium up. They'll come. Of course they
I
will.
love the fact that you're such a professional and you demand like professional standards and you've come on here. I just find that fascinating. Thank you for that's just but
This is a discussion, and you know, everything I do is a conversation about something, jazz, R&B, football, you name it. It's great.
I honestly thought Matt was going to say, you've come on here, you've got all of this, and you've just quoted one of the most famous lines for Fields of Dreams. That was where it was going to go.
That's what we've done,
That's what
man.
I thought.
That's what we are. We are the field of dreams. Well, or nightmares. So let's come on, let's do it then. Let's have a look back at our last few games. I mean, I just want to know how does this and Phil, I'd like to know from you and Mark as well, how does this rate in terms of the Barrow game against Bromley and Cheltenham Town? For me, I can't work out why, but I found it harder to process the game on Saturday than I did the two defeats. I don't know why that is, but I mean, I just found Saturday so because the atmosphere was pumping like 85 minutes. It was just mad. It was just the whole atmosphere. Everyone was jumping. It was just it was just brilliant. You felt like we were on a wave. It was amazing. And then it was
just
the biggest downer. Yeah.
The lack of game management there, you know, the snatching of victory away from us at the last second and stuff. It's so frustrating. And there was a sort of creeping feeling of those horrible days when, you know, even when we were 3-0 up or 2-1 up or something, we knew that we still got time to lose because we're at 91 minutes. There's no time to be complacent. And you know, I kind of had that feeling it was coming, you know.
Yeah.
That feeling, I don't know why. The Bromley one really, really, really frustrated me. I just thought, why, how can we just let this club take 6 points off of us this season? It's just unforgivable, you know. But, you know, you look at where we are. I mean, we're third. Are we third still?
We're still third. Our goal difference.
So everyone's having a bit of a blip. So ain't no thing really, I suppose, except that in the back of my mind there's this creeping kind of fear that we're sort of psychologically slipping a little bit, you know. That's what worries me. And I'd like to go up automatically in third place rather than, you know, go up a playoff in sixth place or something.
Yeah, and that's my thing. Mark, what did you think? How does it rate for you? What's your
In
terms of those games?
Just to echo what Phil is saying, the crowd from the League One days where we had those leads and just never held on to them under Robbo, it's a totally different team. They're still wearing yellow and blue, but the crowd have football PTSD. Which is to say, if you let in a goal when you're 2-0 up with five left or so, which is exactly what happened, similar thing to what happened against Newport. It's only twice as happened all season, but we almost expected it, sadly. We almost expected it. If you look back at the second goal, there were so many opportunities to clear the ball. The guy actually finishes pretty decently. The first goal's a deflection, but you can't do anything about that. But actually, and again, I was sitting with you guys on Saturday, so you heard my frustration, without labouring the point too much. We didn't play that well. We haven't played that well for a number of games at home, but we've been able to find the result. But as Stephen scored that second goal, which was a really good goal and a really good move, and unfortunately another sign of the fact that Nerfield will be playing at a higher level next season and hopefully with us, but potentially not with us, depending on how greedy his agent is. But I literally said, once Stephen has scored, job done.
Yep.
Game over. And of course, it should have been, but it wasn't. And I think Niall pointed out the final whistle, helpfully enough, that with 5 minutes left, Port Vale were drawing 0-0 and we were winning 2-0. And therefore, we were clear of them in third. They then won with another LeBron and Curtis late goal. We only got a point. And so they're now literally level on points with us.
Yep. With a game in hand tomorrow ironically, and they're playing Barrow. So, oh dear me! And Adam, you were actual fact, you were with somebody who did you bring along to the game, because you were much calmer on Saturday than I've heard you've been recently.
Yeah, I came with a friend of mine from work, so I had to rein in a little bit of my excitement to make it less. I mean, I had to behave basically a little bit, but I was so hyped for that game because I'd spent quite a while hoping my friend would come from work and we finally figured it out so that she could come, and I felt it was a game we could win without assuming difficulties. The first half was pretty dull for me in lots of ways, and that was like, oh, what is going on? And so I had hoped for some early subs and whatever. Second half, whatever Jackson said, kicked off pretty well actually, and I quite enjoyed a series of that.
I'll tell you what I find annoying though is that the opposition tends to bring on subs that have an impact, and we bring on subs that have no impact.
Yeah,
no,
I don't.
We got it's like for like,
every
isn't
time,
it? Yeah,
every time they bring on somebody and they're that person's involved in some late rally or equaliser, and yet we've got this sort of like, you know, take him off and put the carbon copy on. And tactics sort of look like they're the same. I can't see any, I don't know.
I wouldn't mind if the carbon copy was like more energised because of the fact they hadn't been playing, but they seem to come on really slow.
To be honest, Josh Kelly, I mean, I like Josh Kelly because he does bring on something slightly different. You know, and certainly we'd point towards the kind of fact that he calls that disruption up front a little bit. But that's the exception. I mean, the only other one that you can think of in recent times has been Ronan Curtis last season, when he actually was it. Every time now, you're completely right. It doesn't really seem to be making any kind of impact. And that's, you know, I'm kind of almost going back. Should Hutch have stayed on?
We had the game won. You know, bring on shore up the back. You know, I mean, the game's won, just got to see it out. And instead, it was like striker off, striker on.
What? They couldn't have Hutchinson was injured, so he came on. And Oggs has been great. He's been in that position. He's done well. But I think it was him who led to the.
But we should just make everyone become defenders and do like punt the ball up, put it in the corner, do whatever. We literally had like
well,
7 8 minutes. It's like what?
It's interesting.
Why were we continuing to attack at the point we spent the first 45 minutes not even doing anything very much in attack, and then the last 10 minutes of the game when we should be figuring out just put everyone behind the ball and just hold on to the ball, pass triangles, do something, just do the basics. Was really weird. I did not get it.
But it's nail on the head there, Adam. It's holding on to the ball. I mean, the most impressive player on the pitch on Saturday in respect to forward line was a guy who we had on loan who really didn't do so well, whose career has gone downhill so much that he's ended up at Barrow on loan from Stevenage, namely Aaron Presley. But he actually led the line absolutely brilliantly. He didn't have any shots, but he brought everybody else on his team into the play extremely well. And when they stuck another big guy on him with him later in the day, then the two of them combined and set up the second goal. Just to completely confirm, this is one of the stats that I found online earlier on, confirm exactly how poor the substitutions are and the impact of them. Someone's come up with this amazing stat, which is, points won and lost after the 75th minute, which obviously is going to relate to changes made by managers in the top half of the League Two. So Crewe Alexandra have won 10 and lost 3 points after the 75th. Colchester are 8th, won 11, lost 5. Grimsby won 6, lost 3. Notts County in 6th, won 9, lost 4. Doncaster, you obviously had that great run, won 10 points and lost 0. No points whatsoever after being in the lead at that point in the 75th minute. Port Vale plus 1-13, lost 7. And the only team, Bradford 1-6, lost 3. Walsall 1-6, lost 0. The only team in the top 10, including down to Salford in 10th, who are negative in that regard, won 3 points after the 75th minute and lost 9.
Ugh.
Is us.
Yeah, that's what I'm sort of talking about, impact. You know, there's a sort of downward negative impact, an implosion when we get substitutes on. Whereas I've seen the opposition bring on players who have been really active and made a really great impact against us. You know, even if they haven't won, you can tell that they've given it their best shot. Whereas we don't seem to have any impact with those subs. It's just like for like, on off, see you later.
And he doesn't seem to trust, even now, he doesn't seem to trust our subs. And I would look at the bench, I thought we've got a fairly decent bench in terms of players, but he doesn't trust them. So they're coming on to sort of try and see games out, and they're not doing that job. I mean, when Furlong's come on, he's taken the corner, which has led to their first goal. So, and it, you know, that corner was like, whatever it was, 85, 86 minutes. Just a short corner. It's just simple. Don't put it in the box. Take a short corner.
But Furlong, for example, when he's played from the start, hasn't taken any set pieces. So why would he suddenly take that corner?
No.
Yeah, yes, it was a poor corner, but there were 9 players in the way. Basically, Lewis got caught in the halfway line, no one backed up behind him, and we got caught in the break particularly poorly. And everyone's blaming Furlong, of course, but, you know, it's an easy thing to do. Just because he replaced Tilly doesn't mean he's...
You're depressing me already. Why did I come back? Like, it was such a... That last bit of the game was so depressing. It's unbelievable.
I'm guessing looking at your room, you're a goalkeeper, Adam. You must be a goalkeeper, so
no,
see two late goals like that.
Yeah.
No. I'm sorry for
the green there. Or is that blue? I can't see.
No. That's the goal. He's just got weird lighting. It's a weird lighting.
But he has weird lighting.
Oh, okay. We've never understood it. It's a thing.
No, that is the goalie's top there, that one. Then that's a regular one. Then that's the special one. And then there's other ones.
No one's actually ever seen Adam wear anything apart from the walkout jacket, frankly.
I wear those tops underneath. Thank you.
Philly, you don't strike me as the kind of guy that wears replica shirts.
Not anymore.
Too cool for school?
I think a grown man of my age shouldn't be wearing replica shirts. I stopped. I rein it in at like walkout jackets, I think. That's me. But then even then, I kind of like go, ooh, I'll put on a bit of timber here. Maybe I should just go for the big puffer coat instead. But no, I do have a box full of different Wimbledon shirts going all the way back to the Premier League days. You know, but I stopped buying them, to be honest with you. You know, I'd rather just give the money to the club if they need it than buy a shirt, you know.
Mate, it's because you get given them. I know you might not get paid. You might not get paid, but I know there are other perks.
I used to get little. I mean, I used to live in Tooting, right? And I was working in North London. And then, oddly, I used to meet Dean Holdsworth, John Goodman, and Paul Heald, who were on their way to training because they all lived in North London in Woodford. I used to come up at Stockwell, wait on the street. Dean Holdsworth would pull up, go in the boot, pull out a top, some boots, his lucky shorts, whatever, and give them to me, and I'd give him a bunch of Kiss compilation CDs and then wish him well, and we'd go on from there, right?
Mate!
Yeah, and...
Well, the kind of thing Dean Holdsworth normally did in the street, really.
Well, I got in trouble for that as well. You know about that, right?
Come on, you got to tell us,
don't know about that. What's this?
This is the best story. I mean, it's the best and the worst. I mean, Dean Holdsworth, obviously... I got to know a few of the players, Effen, Robbie, Dean in particular. John Goodman was a good friend of mine, Paul Heald. And we used to sometimes go out for a drink, but mostly I would just see them around. I remember going to like Middlesbrough once and Dino Holdsworth stuck his head out and was like, gave me 6 tickets. And I said, oh, it's just me, Dino. And he said, oh, just hand them out. And so I did. Somebody came up to me and that person and his 4 mates got in for free. And that person actually has become one of my best friends for like 30 years. Went to stay in this place in New York just recently. You know, it's great, great kind of like legacy of those tickets, you know. But Dean Holdsworth, he used to love dance music. And, you know, he was a family man and he lived in near Epping Forest. And I used to go around there. He invited me around one Christmas, log fire, kids playing, Mrs. H there and Dino showing me his trophy room and stuff. And I was DJing, I think, at the Epping Forest Country Club. I said, oh, you should come down, Dean. You know, it's great down there. You know, it's a fantastic crowd. Oh, no, mate, I'm all right. I'm a family man, you know. Anyway, 2 days later, I'm pulling into a petrol station in Clapham South. And I see the front of the News of the World, Dirty Dino Doggo, whatever, right? And it's the Lindsay Dawn McKenzie story. And I'm like, what is this? I pull the paper out of the rack and I look at it. I bought the paper. I get in the car and I go to my missus, look at this. And she went, I knew he was shifty, right? And it was, you read through the story about, you know, him and Lindsay Dawn McKenzie, and I couldn't believe what I was looking at. And then I saw the line. He was so romantic, he used to get me dedications on Kiss FM. Right. And I'm like, oh, now I'm complicit. Like, what the hell? He phoned me up and go, Philo, do us a favor, mate. Can you shout out 2 girls I'm working with? They're models. Their names are Lindsay and Dawn. So I go along with it. Oh, yeah. Big shout out to Lindsay and Dawn, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, you know, suffice to say, on New Year's Day, Mrs. Holdsworth phones me up and curses me down the phone.
Oh,
you're in it with him, you this, you, oh, I shouldn't really be saying this really, but I mean, you know, she wouldn't mind me saying that thing, but she, I had to explain it and she was like, oh, okay, I misunderstood. And that was it, you know, I it was in the paper and I was complicit, but I managed to, you know, I argued my way out of it. I literally didn't know, but it was one of those.
I'm guessing Mr. and Mrs. Holdsworth are not still together, right?
Don't know. I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Wow.
I don't think so. Yeah, I've seen him obviously since very. Was he Bolton manager when he came?
Yeah.
Said hello.
He went for the Wimbledon job, obviously.
Did he go for the Wimbledon job?
Yeah, he did.
Didn't know that.
He made the final 3, I think.
Oh, no. Right. For goodness sake, Niall. Like, seriously, am I going to have to cut this out?
No, you're fine with this bit. This is fine.
Yeah, you're right.
This is ancient history.
But that is crazy about Dino. Were you ever sort of like mates again after that incident, or was he sort of like, you know, a bit?
Not really. I mean,
no.
Kind of, you know, just. I mean, it was really painful when he took time off and then he came back, and then whoever the opposition team were asked the question of whether she did this and did that, you know, as soon as he came on as a sub. And
Oh,
that was particularly painful for the family. You know the song I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
And stuff like that. And then funnily enough, you know, the whole kind of protest years kicked in and we were doing something else. So, you know, inevitably our paths would cross.
And then he went to play in Buckinghamshire. So that's his copybook blotted
for
forever.
Oh, dear. Okay.
It's just gone from bad to worse. This Dean Holdsworth story is just really taking it downhill.
I really wish Dean well. I liked him. I thought he was a sound guy, and I couldn't believe the story when I saw it. But you know, when I was sort of complicit in it, I thought, oh no, what's going on here? You know, he was so romantic. He got
allegedly it was in the car park at Richardson Evans. Which
I don't know any of the details of any
do.
Of that. All the allegations, I couldn't tell you whether any of that is right. Or
how
true.
Do you know this? Tool Mark. I mean, I don't know.
I say allegedly. I read the same newspaper article that Phil did.
I don't know any of that. I mean, I just know that I just answered the phone, did a shout, and the next thing, you know, it was all very domestic.
Wow. See,
so
we are learning.
Does the modern Wimbledon player not ask for a shout out on Jazz FM then?
See, I have no. I have no idea how we go from I don't buy replica shirts anymore because I'm too old, whereas I obviously clearly buy loads of them, to a completely sordid affair. It's so mad. But
I think it was like when I said I've got a box full of them and they've each got a story.
Yeah.
I mean, I do see Wimbledon players in odd situations. I saw Andy Sullivan the other day at a gig, like a DJ gig in Hackney. He was there with his mate, who's a DJ, who's well-known on the scene. And, he was there. But I haven't seen any of the old school. I mean, I think Effen Okoku, I still speak to Effen every now and again. And that's about it.
He seems like a really cool guy. I mean, like, he seems
super cool.
Yeah. Really decent bloke.
Effen's great, yeah. I mean, Robbie, I don't know where Robbie went to America, didn't he? Robbie Earl?
He's
got his own TV show, The Two Robbies. Yeah. He basically is a pundit for Premier League football.
Right. Because I got a message once when we were at Haringey Borough, I think. I ended up on the TV because Barry James was waving a flag. And then Effen Okoku went, oh, there's my mate Chris Phillips down there. Da, da, da. And we were on TV somewhere, I think. Somebody texted me, oh, you just got a shout on whatever it was, whatever the TV channel was. Mad. Do you remember that, Haringey Borough? What a missed game that was. Jesus.
1-0. God, that was just painful.
That was like Ardy's last game, wasn't it? Just remember he was just stood in the rain, soaking. Yeah, that was horrible.
Oddly, the nearest game to where I live in Wood Green, and it took me the longest time to get home from there. And soaked through, miserable. God.
Yeah, even though we'd won with a deflected goal, I think goal, wasn't it?
Mitch Pinnock in the last minute.
That was it.
Pinnock.
But if you listen to Ardley's interviews, he said he'd already agreed that he was going to leave before the game.
All right. Well, there we go. Well, chaps, this has been fantastic. Fellow, thank you so much. You'll definitely have to come back on, and we won't have changed. It will still be the unprofessional.
I've got loads of stories I can share. Now I'm worried now that I'm going to get a libel case or something against me. But
it's all right. The volume of business we have, Phil, you'll be okay. You'll be safe.
Yeah, don't worry about it, mate.
In revelation from DJ Chris Phillips, a sensational story about player Dean Holdsworth. Plays now on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I am actually talking of BBC Radio 5 Live. There was an allegation put out somewhere else on other social media that Aaron Paul apparently was a card-carrying Man U fan, which I thought was a bit bizarre. And of course, because I'm so stupid, I actually said this to him as he came into the stadium on Saturday. And let's just say I'm lucky not to be about 3 foot under, frankly. You just said, I'm here, aren't I?
Well, speaking from someone who's literally had Aaron Paul riding on his... Is it Aaron Paul? Did I say Aaron Paul? Aaron riding on my back when the late goal went in against the franchise and we won. I mean, I can tell he's got a lot of love for this club, so it's all good.
That was the one thing I was going to ask you, because we had Michael Tate on a few weeks ago. How on earth did you manage to react to get to that and somehow stay professional?
I mean, that was amazing.
Yeah. You do. You have to hold it down, don't you? You have to hold it down.
So every year we do our own version of our own special awards, and so we do our club person of the award. And you wouldn't know this, Philo, but you were nominated. You were nominated because of your fine PA work, especially at that particular game. Because we always listen out, we always know the tunes that you're going to play in the run up to it, because there seems to be some sort of link between those particular tunes, and we always love it that you give, you know, the attendance and what, and it's the home attendance where it's usually given away. So
there's
a moment of
like
inspiration
that,
because you know that there is a tendency for us to acknowledge and applaud the away fans for coming all the way from Carlisle or whatever. But obviously, when that lot turn up, it's like, oh no, how do I get around this one? So I thought, I know what I'll do, I'll switch it. And I remember the last time they were there, and I said, you know, attendance today 8,423, including 7,900 home fans. And the guy from the franchise went, oh, come on. went, it's our house. You know, you do it at your house. You do what you want. We do what we want here.
Well, they had the audacity to play the women's game yesterday at Stadium MK.
I saw that.
And literally, it looks like it was completely empty. And then we whooped their ass 3-0.
And I think that has almost completed a whitewash. So our under-18s have beaten them twice. We've beaten them, you know, twice and then a drawn at their place. And the women have beaten them twice as well. It's been good on that sense this season. But congratulations to the women's team going up to franchise and winning 3-0.
Fantastic.
Brilliant.
You never know. They might even be lucky enough to get relegated to non-league and change their name to Milton Keynes City again.
That's what I've been looking at. I talk about it with Matt regularly. I've been watching the teams at the bottom going, come on, they've just got to win, like, you know, Morecambe, Carlisle, get it together now. Come on.
Yeah.
But it's a bit difficult.
It would be so nice to spend another season above them in the league. That would just be brilliant. In the same division. Yeah, in a different division would be amazing.
I'd quite like to be two divisions above them. I like us to go up and them to go down. And we can resurrect that famous song. Wobbles going up and the franchise going down, which I love.
Anyhow,
we've got to remember how far we were away from them. You know, the fact that
some of us were there putting cones down on Wimbledon Common before we even had a club, and ushering players around and seeing Joe Shearing turn up at the trials and stuff, and to get to where we are now. I mean, I think the moment that I really kicked myself, pinched myself, was when we were at the Emirates and we took so many fans in there, and even my Arsenal mates were like, "Bloody hell, you brought some." Fans, and they were really noisy, and I'm like, yeah, you know, we did this.
Yeah,
that was an amazing. I couldn't have cared less if, you know, those Arsenal flyboys had killed us like 8-0. I couldn't care less. We were in their house bringing the noise, and you know, I remember putting cones down on Wimbledon Common.
Yeah, man.
If, you know, and it's from that to the Emirates. Thank
and
you.
I think that's it. I think the thing that's we always have to remember that, because you know, results like Saturday happen, and it was a fucking pig, but the truth is how far we've come, you know, from those
you
moments.
Can remember that being West Ham at King's Meadow.
Yeah.
Sorry, awesome. I thought it was a joke about West Ham again.
Yeah.
What about that? Oh, I was getting texts galore from all my Tottenham mates going, I'm in heaven.
Or like, you know, Ethan, you know, the game we narrowly lost against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge.
Oh.
When they brought on, like, what was it, £200 million worth of talent, and that was the only way they managed to turn it around. Didn't we go 1-0 up in that game?
We did by a penalty.
We did,
yeah.
And then I think someone worked out that the sub they brought on in the second half, his transfer fee alone was 71 times our entire playing budget since we started. No. That's the stupid. Well, I don't need. I'm just teaching grandma to suck eggs with you, Niall, when it comes to the rift between the rich and the rest of the pyramid.
But that's the best. That is the massive difference, right? And I have bumped into a few football fans who I don't think they're into football, but they don't quite get the football fan community thing, and we typify that beyond, you know, a measure. And I think that's what's fantastic. Yes, we lost on Saturday. Yes, it's frustrating. But at the end of the day...
We didn't lose. It felt like we lost, but we didn't.
Sorry, yeah, not, yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day... Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, yeah.
At the end of the day, you know, that's what makes it so super special, and probably what makes us so frustrated for the whole weekend of drawing, etc., feeling depressed for Sunday, Monday, more than others. And I do find that a bit difficult to understand when there's people who are really into football but don't quite get what a football club can do for its community, for the people, etc. And I think we typify all of that, which is fantastic. And I'm sure we will continue to do that, which I'm super excited about.
Yep. Brilliant. Awesome. Well,
am I allowed to mention the one stat that you said you didn't like, Matt?
Oh God, yeah, no, I really don't like this stat at all. Come on.
So obviously we are away at Walsall on Saturday.
Yep.
And as we know, Walsall have not done so well recently. In fact, they've got a worse record than anyone else.
Brilliant.
In the last six games, yep, in League Two, Walsall are the only team not to have won a game.
Brilliant. And
every other team, so all 23 other teams in League Two, have got more points than Walsall have, which is four out of the last six.
Brilliant. Brilliant. That's fantastic. That's great.
And we're playing them next.
Yeah, great. That's exactly the sort of stat I love. I love that. It fills me with confidence. If there's anyone into betting out here,
I'm all right with it. I just hate it when we play teams that are at the toilet end of the league. We just seem to flop against them for some reason, and we seem to always pull
like
it
Barrow. Sides.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what Wolves. Oh God. God, just so many pain. But there's been good moments. It must have been a lot of good moments because we're in third. So.
Hey, this is the thing to remember. We are literally punching above our weight already. We are in a position we didn't expect at the beginning of the season, even the optimists amongst us. So, we have to remember that, one game is not a big deal. And whether we stay in this league or get promoted or not, we're doing fantastic things. And I hope we can figure out some ways to, increase our revenue, increase all the cool stuff that happens at Power Lane, which I think we're going to do anyway. So, let's not get too depressed.
Okay. All right.
We haven't even started singing what we were anticipating, the new song after the curry song that we were talking about last week. But we can hold that till next week.
We'll have to hold on to that now. That's a good one. We'll have to hold on. But listen, very quick yes or no's from you all. If we end up in the playoffs from this position we're in now, okay. Is this a good season or has it been a failure? I'm going to go.
Season.
You've been a great, you say great season.
Yeah.
Okay. Mark?
Yeah, I've got to go agree with Philly. We'll be gutted and disappointed, but it'll be a much better season and it will be an exponential increase and, growth from Jackson and the coaching staff. Whether they'll stay or not, whether some fans will want them to stay is another matter, but we've got lots of other podcasts to discuss that about.
Yeah. Adam, from this position.
It's been a fantastic season.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And not Niall?
It's been a good season.
That's exactly it. Come on, guys.
Which part of South East London you live in, Nathan? I think it's quite depressing by the sound of it.
I think I had to get the tone right there, Phil. That was the key, right? Because it's like I'm still haunted by the fact that the Cheltenham, the Bromley, and Barrow.
It's the Bromley. Bromley that really warms me up.
That all haunts me, right? So,
can
I say, if I was just landed now, having not experienced any of that, and looked at the table and thought, I'd say yes, good season. But because of those three things, I'd say it's a good season.
we're going to go to Walsall with a lot of fans.
Yeah.
It's the volunteers away day there as well, so there'll be an extra couple of hundred that wouldn't possibly go normally. So
I think it's going to be busy home and away to the end of the season. I think it'll be pretty busy. So you have to get used to those numbers, Philo.
Chaps, and I've got my tickets for Grimsby. Get in there quick, boys. They've almost sold 100,000 already.
Yeah, I've got to go and grab one. Get your tickets. People, get your tickets. Thank you, dear listener, for listening. Huge thanks to Monfrenar Cooper, to the wonderful producer, Adam Proctor, to our stats and football guru, Mark Lewis, and our wonderful special guest. Thank you so much, Chris Phillips. Philo,
thank you for the invitation.
You are welcome. We look forward to hearing you in a couple of weeks' time. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, everyone. Thanks for listening. We are the Same Old Wombles. We're back.